Would you please pray with me? Holy God, you promised never to break your covenant with us in the midst of the multitude of our words and our daily lives. Speak your eternal word to us, that we may respond to your gracious promises with faithfulness, service, unity, and love. Amen. A reading from the book of Ruth, chapter 1, verses 1 through 18. Listen now for God's holy word to us this morning. During the days in which the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. A man with his wife and two sons went from Bethlehem of Judah to dwell in the territory of Moab. The name of that man was Elimelech. The name of his wife was Naomi. And the name of his sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They entered the territory of Moab and settled there. But Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. Then only she was left along with her two sons. They took wives for themselves, Moabite women. The name of the first was Orpah, and the name of the second was Ruth. And they lived there for about 10 years. But both of the sons, Mahlon and Chilion, also died. Only the woman was left without her two children and without her husband. Then she arose along with her daughters-in-law to return from the field of Moab, because while in the territory of Moab, she had heard that the Lord had paid attention to his people by providing food for them. She left the place where she had been, and her two daughters-in-law went with her. They went along the road to the land of Judah. Naomi said to her daughters-in-law, "Go, turn back, each of you to the household of your mother. May the Lord deal faithfully with you, just as you have done with the dead and with me. May the Lord provide for you so that you may find security, each woman in the household of her husband." Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. But they replied to her, "No, instead we will return with you to your people." Naomi replied, "Turn back, my daughters. Why would you go with me? Will there be any sons in my womb that they would be husbands for you? Turn back, my daughters. Go. I am too old for a husband. If I were to say that I have hope, even if I had a husband tonight, and even more, if I were to bear sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you refrain from having a husband? No, my daughters, this is more bitter for me than for you, since it's God's will has come out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth stayed with her. Naomi said, "Look, your sister-in-law is turning back to her people and to her gods. Turn back after your sister-in-law." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to abandon you, to turn back from following after you. Wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Wherever you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May God do this to me, and more so, even if death separates me from you." When Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her about it. This is the word of the Lord. I'm not sure how you all feel about the times and the culture that we live in these days, but sometimes it seems to me that it is very much a time marked by our differences, a time marked by those things that separate us. I'm not talking about like our diversity or those distinctive aspects of our individual createdness. I'm not talking about those things that inform and enrich our lives, but I'm talking about socially constructed division. I'm talking about the heightened sense of compartmentalizing of people, compartmentalizing that labels people as many types of others, others that evoke all kinds of emotion and sometimes even visceral reactions, whether the difference is social location or gender or race, religious or political affiliation. We live in a time where our technology is often used to exploit our difference in ways that are meant to keep us apart. Some of you may have read in my bio that before seminary, I worked in politics. For the most part, I served as a political appointee for Democrats. And it was just about 10 years ago when I met one of my dearest and closest friends. We'll call her Amy. Amy and I were both selected to serve on a city commission together. Interestingly enough, Amy was selected by the Democratic mayor at the time, and I was selected by the lone Republican city council member. And if you knew Amy, my friend, you would know just how ironic this story is. Amy is a die-hard Republican, and she and I share little in common. She is a millionaire. She is white and some 20 plus years my senior. She is a devoted Roman Catholic. She's an active contributor to the Republican Party in Minnesota, and she's a person who's hosted fundraisers in her beautiful homes, even for people like Sarah Palin. Both Amy and I are passionate about people, and we care about others through our respective lenses. But our respective lenses sometimes are so far apart that many in today's culture might wonder how we're even friends. Well, rewind some thousands of years ago to set yourself in the ancient Near East, this time in the biblical passage that we read this morning. The book of Ruth opens and we're introduced to these three women whose lives are woven together by circumstance. The book of Ruth is situated in our Bible immediately following the book of Judges, and the opening reveals this as it states, during the days when judges ruled. Hebrew Bible scholar Catherine Schifferdecker describes the book of Ruth in relationship with the book of Judges by saying, if the book of Judges is largely about the people of Israel not keeping the law, then the book of Ruth is about people going above and beyond the law. Certainly, in this passage that we read this morning, it's just a glimpse into a story that is one of the most beautiful tales in the Bible. Rich themes and images that I like to imagine that many of us can relate with. Themes and images that I can definitely relate with. From the relationship between mother and daughter to that sense of being a stranger in a land unknown, to the sense of finding my way in the midst of loss and transition. When we open the scene with a family of immigrants living in a foreign land, and we quickly come to the place in the Bible where the land is overcome with famine, and we encounter three women. You may have noticed that the Bible rarely spells everything out in explicit terms for us. But these three women were childless widows, and they were starving in the land of Moab. We have three different women, and the Bible doesn't offer details about the personal narratives of each one of these women, but we get a glance of their individualness as they respond differently to the perilous situation that they're in. They are separate and they are individual, but they share a lot in common in this opening scene. They've lost their loved ones, they've lost their husbands, and Naomi has lost her son, but they have also lost their status and their standing in culture. Without husbands or male heirs to fulfill that role, these women are left in the most vulnerable places, on the margins of society. Here they are together in Moab, where there is famine in the land, and they have no husbands, they have no children, they have no opportunities, and no safety net to secure the minimal basics for survival. These three women stand together in their nothingness. So what are they to do now? I have to wonder about what's going on with Naomi here. And I imagine all the possible emotions that she's experiencing. Naomi tells her daughter-in-laws to return home to their own families as she prepares for Judah. Maybe she's considering their best interests. They have lost their husbands, and Naomi has no other sons for them to marry. And in Jewish tradition, these widows would have been entitled to marry a brother of their husbands. In the presence of this loss, maybe Naomi's daughters-in-laws only serve as a reminder. Or maybe Naomi was ready to part ways with her daughters from another culture. The Moabite women from the pagan land, where God seemed to not look favorably on the people. Maybe Naomi was thinking about herself and wondering if her luck might change if she returned to her own people and her own faith with her own customs. Maybe Naomi is tired of intermingling with those from a different race and culture. These are things that we're only left to wonder because the Bible doesn't spell them out, doesn't tell us what each of these women were thinking. Well, in this scene, Orpah does what any reasonable person would do. She follows her mother-in-law's command to return home. Often there's judgment that befalls Orpah in this story. But imagine what you would do in the same situation. Orpah follows the command of her mother-in-law to return home. This seems to me what any reasonable person would do. If you're faced with the unknown and the tenuous future, what other choice might one have? Who among us would be willing to walk an uncertain path that could lead to our own demise when we're given the choice of returning to the comfort of our own family? So let's tell some truth about this story. If we look at this through a 21st century psychological lens, we'd see that Ruth is crazy. Yes, the crazy one in this scene is Ruth. We're so conditioned to romanticize this narrative as a love story that we miss the utter ridiculousness of Ruth's action. Ruth enters into scary and unknown territory with no sense of security about her future. And as she does this, she enters into a lifelong covenant with Naomi. Ruth commits not just to stay with Naomi with some chance that they might find food and that they might find shelter, but to remain by Naomi's side always. Wherever you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. And so if we look at this through the 21st century lens, we might realize that Ruth is potentially exercising her own death warrant. But it's that remarkable and crazy move that Ruth makes that binds these two women together. Binds them together not because Ruth had an obligation to Naomi. Ruth would have been warranted to go on the same path as Orpah, and the culture wouldn't have held it against her. Naomi had nothing to give Ruth, and remaining with Naomi, Ruth was cast on the margins of society. Yet Ruth chooses that countercultural path over self-interest. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. It is this well-known verse from the story that reveals one of the most significant themes throughout the book of Ruth. In the entire story of Ruth, God is never explicitly revealed. God's voice is not heard from above. God's voice is not heard in the burning bush. God's voice is not even heard in a small, still voice. But God is present throughout the story of Ruth, because the story of Ruth is about belonging, and it's about blessing, and it's about faithful love. It's about God's faithfulness incarnated in human beings. Isn't this how we experience God in our own lives? How we come to experience God in church community? Is this not how we experience God in times of turmoil and transition, as well as the moments of joy and new life? In the very presence of covenant relationship, of standing in solidarity that Ruth commits with Naomi and then commits with Naomi's whole community. And that's where we see God revealed in the book of Ruth. That covenantal walk is defined throughout Ruth in the Hebrew word hesed. When we read through the whole story of Ruth, we see words like kindness, and we see words like faithfulness in the English translations. These don't capture the rich meaning that's in the Hebrew word of hesed. That's because hesed always engenders hesed. Hesed engenders hesed. Faithfulness engenders faithfulness. Kindness engenders kindness. Hesed is how we stand with others, how we stand with the other, regardless of who that other is and what they might look like, whether it's their religious or political affiliation. I think in our culture today, we see many others. We know the others that would be defined in the Bible, the strangers and the poor and the oppressed. But what about those of us that hold on to our truths from particular perspectives and particular lenses? Who are the others for us? Our contemporary circumstances, to some extent, we're all guilty of segregating people into categories. We might even hold legitimate reasons for doing this. I have my own categories of others. Those who don't share the same views that I have. Those who may come from completely different religions. And even those from other Christian traditions. Traditions that don't hold the same theological truths that my tradition does. At some point, I realize that my other can even be a person like my good friend, Amy. How can she be an other when she is someone who's covenanted to stand with me, to be with me in relationship, regardless of all of our difference? in this culture that we reside in today, where we define ourselves in categories, where we surround ourselves in the comfort of sameness, and we lose. We strip the other of their humanity. And for so many reasons, it's in that we, to some extent, we fall prey to the psychological impact that generates more hostility, that generates more hatred and more assumptions and separateness. Well, we can continue on that path, the path that continues a downward spiral. Or we can venture into the unknown, the scary territory, like Ruth did, where we enter into covenant with people who are not like us. We don't abandon that space of our own beliefs and our own perspective, but we trust that Hesed engenders Hesed, and that God is always present to transform. We trust that the covenant that we have so faithfully entered into with God extends to the whole community, the whole of community, even those we righteously deem as other. We call upon that risk that Ruth took so many thousands of years past, our ancestors in faith who were so faithfully held by God, that same God who holds us together today. We remember Ruth's words as we step out to enter into solidarity with the many, many faces of other. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. There I will be buried. All thanks be to God. Amen.